Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
And we are back. Welcome to yet another episode of the Startup Hustle Podcast. We have a really special show set up for you today, but first I want to tell you about our very, very special episode sponsor. Today's episode of Startup Hustle is sponsored by Helium 10, cutting-edge software that helps grow your business on Amazon. Startup Hustler listeners get 50% off their first month of Helium 10 Platinum when you go to helium10.com and use the code HUSTLE at checkout. Don't wait. To get 50% off your first month, go to helium10.com and use code HUSTLE. I'm Lauren Conaway, founder and CEO of Innovate Her KC and one of the co-hosts of the Startup Hustle podcast. And today we have with us a woman who really should need no introduction, but I'm going to go ahead and introduce her anyway. But this woman has been a hero to me for years. We're going to talk about some very cool stuff, but welcome, Miss Anita Newton, Chief Innovation Officer of Community America. Anita, thank you so much for being here today.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. It's good to be here.
Yeah, well. So let's, I don't want to waste any time with the trivialities. I want to hop right into it. So tell me this, why don't you, well, first tell us a little bit about Anita. I want to hear a little bit about you, and then I want to hear about kind of what you do for Community America.
Yeah, well, Lauren, thanks so much for having me. We could have a mutual fan club. So I love what you're doing. And I love how you're kind of build up the community in the right way. So,
but you do the exact same thing. Like you, Community America, you lead an organization that is extremely community minded. Like, I mean, it's right there in the title, but Community America does some amazing work to fund and to grow and to help organizations, companies. You do amazing work.
Well, thank you. It's great to hear that. I feel like I literally won the lottery when I took this job. And, you know, truth be told, I didn't know what a credit union was when I started. I wasn't even really familiar with all the benefits of a credit union and Community America. But just, you know, on that side, you know, I am so lucky because I work for an organization that is really focused on helping customers and members deliver peace of mind for our members. So we really care about our customers. And for me, even though I have a fancy title, I'm basically just an entrepreneur living in the basement who collects a 401k. So there's no delusions of grandeur, but I'm able to really think about our customers. We call them members, really deeply, and think about what they need and how we could be most helpful for them. And I just feel so lucky that I have the privilege to build out products and services and branded experience to make that happen. And go into that, I think the only just thing I would say about me personally is I'm from Kansas, but right now I live in Prairie Village with my husband and my two teenage children who are in the full on eye roll phase. Something stronger than
coffee. You as a mom, I was like, really, really eye rolls kids. Come on.
Don't kid yourself. And then, and a couple of dogs. So I have a wonderful life there and just love living in Kansas City and just feel so fortunate to work where I do. So yeah. That's a little bit about me.
Well, so I have to ask you this, because I've seen your job title in a couple of different places. And I know, so Community America has a huge, I guess it feels like a cultural focus based on what I know of the organization for innovation. Like you walk into the different locations around town and you have like those kiosks. Those are so handy. I love them, by the way. Wow. I just want you to know that. But you have a big focus on innovation. And so your title is actually Chief Innovation Officer. And I'm going to take this very selfish opportunity to ask you, you know, in your day to day as Chief Innovation Officer, what does that look like?
Yeah, I know it's a great question because, you know, it's funny. I will tell you the story and it will give you good context and, you know, all the more reason for the question. I mean, when you look at innovation labs around, and that's what I run a lab around the country, there's hundreds of them, 90% of them fail. And in fact, when our CEO, who's this Lisa Ginter, who's truly a visionary, asked me to take this job or consider this job, I had 2 hours with her and members of the board. And I spent the first hour trying to talk her out of doing this because 90% failure rate, it's hard to measure success. It takes you at least 2 years to really see, real efficacy. You're putting hard numbers on soft values. It's hard to integrate. So I actually showed, for those of you who know, Paul Graham's Trough of Sorrow. I actually shared that with her. But then after I'd completely killed her buzz, I said, you know, how can we actually build this to make it effective? And so I will tell you and it hasn't really changed. And I've been doing this for, you know, 3.5 years now. The work that we do starts with a very strong strategic filter. And, I think so many labs and incubators can get really, can get distracted with, you know, lots of objects or technology for technology's sake. We have a very strategic filter in terms of the kind of what we're trying to deliver for our members. The second thing is, and there's some labs that are really focused on technology. We are more of a consumer-driven organization where our thinking is deep insights into our members and then building products and services and experiences from those insights. And you see a lot of labs do the reverse. So they'll come in and say, hey, I've got this new, you know, machine learning, you know, that, you know, you can use to connect to your phone that can, you know, make your car turn on or something that isn't necessarily, it's more of a technology focus. That to me is a secondary thing. So that's really important for us in terms of how we screen this. And then the third thing I'll say, just in terms of the context, is there's different kinds of innovation, you know, and just at a very high level, there's incremental where, you know, you're taking a product and making it red to blue on one side. And then there's disruptive, which you're trying to come up with the next Tesla. The space that we focus on is what's called adjacent innovation, where you're taking your current products and services, but you're twisting it or you're taking your capabilities and changing it in a way that is different enough, but ultimately is rooted in really delivering against that consumer insight. And honestly, when you look at the data, 80% of true innovation happens there. So with that as context, what we do on a day-to-day basis is really simple in that we look at certain key segments of our member base and we think about what are the products or services and branded experiences that we believe can deliver across that insight or that problem in a way that no one else can. So I don't know if that helps give you a sense of the context, but that's really been pretty consistent the last several years I've been here.
Yeah. Well, and that's really fascinating. And I love your approach. Like, let's start with the insights we can glean from data, and then let's build a strategy. Like, we're not here to innovate just for innovation's sake. We're here to build a strong culture and build a strong suite of products and in different ways for us to serve our members. Also, just want to note for the folks playing at home, you know, with credit unions, you have members rather than clients or customers. And I love the fact that credit unions, each member has a stake of ownership in the performance of the entity, you know, and that's how you get that real community kind of feel. Like, not only am I an account holder here, but I have pride of ownership in this beautiful organization that's being built. And I think that's so cool. And it's really important to note that. So I want to ask you this, because we're going to talk about some of those big clients a little bit later, but you and I actually, we have some experience in working together on a couple of different fronts. You know, first things first, you know, one of the things that you talk about is serving your clients in the different demographics. You know, you do a lot of work through Community America with youth initiatives and entrepreneurship. So I wanted to talk about that briefly and just kind of pick your brain. Like, have you gained any insights about the emerging market?
Yeah, I mean, we spend so much time, you know, on that young set. We call them Generation Z. You've heard the term. And so just a couple of things for those who may not know, there's 61 million of them, ages 14 to 24, they're entering the workforce. They are the largest generation. And I call them, they're literally the smartest, not smartest generation you will ever meet, in the sense that they are, so in terms of them being brilliant, they have two things that distinguish them that are different than any other, audience or generation. They're obviously really, really tech savvy, but they have a lot of ingenuity. So you give them an internet connection and $40 and they can start a business.
Right.
They're intuitively able to do that. And they have great empathy. So they're the most diverse generation. They care more about equality and empathy than any other. And that, as you know, Lauren, so well, that notion of technology and understanding who, you know, walking in other people's shoes, those are key ingredients to really win in the world. So that's why they rock. Where they are not strong is making the jump from school to work. There is such a big gap in, you know, understanding, like, they can, you know, they can mine Bitcoin, but they don't know how to mail a letter. You know, they don't,
right.
They don't know when you in an office space, like, how to email and communicate. And so those are the basics that I think all of us as adults should work on. And the only last thing I'll say, just as a quick thing, especially for those of you parents in the audience, making sure that they know, you know, that school teaches you to memorize something, take the test and forget it. So, and it's a syllabus, so you know exactly what's going to happen. Well, as you know, Lauren, in your world, like, you know,
there's not the way the world works.
No, you have to have the confidence and ability to use sort of that computer in your pocket and go figure stuff out and feeling confident to do that.
Yeah.
That's a skill that kids need to start working on now. So it's a really been a fun segment to work on. And we spend a lot of time on entrepreneurship and really going hard around financial education right now. And it's been really, really, really good. I'm loving the work.
Well, that is awesome. And I know that Community America, like, you have become something of a bank of choice, or a credit union of choice for startups and small companies. And so I know, like, I think that there are a lot of folks and founders who are really, really drawn to that community feel with some tech tool. I mean, I got to tell it, like, the mobile check deposit saves my life. I am a Community America account holder, by
the way. Thank you.
So, huge fan.
Check me out.
But so how does, I'm going to ask you this, and then we're going to catapult into another conversation, but how does Community America look out for the little guy or support some of those smaller organizations?
Yeah, I mean, that we try to have two opposing factors. We are really focused on providing the cutting edge technology to reduce friction and make it seamless. So mm-hmm. that's necessary, but what our superpower, we're very good at that, by the way, our technology and our system, and you've talked about it, but our superpower is the fact that you can talk to someone and get great advice and experience, because especially when you're a prosumer or a small entrepreneur and your banker, I mean, you think about your kitchen cabinet, your banker is the person that's going to be, you know, they are essential to your success. And I will tell you, knowing that team, you know, they're out on nights and weekends and they're doing whatever they can to support and help. And it is non-scalable. And we have made a commitment to having resources that really understand our business. And that's why, I mean, we do get a lot of startups, and they tell us that the kind of service we get, the kind of experience, the ability to kind of bend over backwards, not always, but we will do everything we can. And it is a relic of the past, but it is so critical, that one-to-one, I know you, I care about you, I believe in your business. You can't really fake that. You can't fake that. So that's the two things that we draw on. And that's our focus. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it absolutely does. And I can tell you that as a consumer, I have definitely seen that reflected in my customer journey. And I know many, many others who have felt that as well. So one of the things that Community America, and I've noticed this over the years that you've kind of been on my radar, but one of the things that you are very, very good at is pulling in those big clients. And I guess that I get the number one that I can think of right off the top of my head is you had a pretty big partnership with the Kansas City Chiefs. But I know that you have partnerships with other organizations around town. I know that you have kind of built a name on catering to the little guy, but then also offering that technology, that ease, that you know, convenience, that mm-hmm. service that attracts big players as well. Yeah. So what does that look like for Community America? I mean, do you all sit around a big table and just kind of, maybe we'll reach out to so-and-so this week?
in terms of the, I call them strategic big partnerships, I give all the credit to our CEO. There's a whole army of people that support her, but she is extremely visionary about and intentional about picking partners that align with her strategically, and working together for common goals. So, and it's like a marriage, it takes work. And so we don't enter into them lightly, but we do enter in them for the long haul. So our partnership with the Chiefs is a long-term partnership. We just entered a relationship with the Royals and it's a long-term partnership. We've got a couple of other things that we're looking at, but they're very thoughtful. And it's not just about, I think if I can impress upon you, it's not about an exchange of services and money. It's about, do their vision, their mission, what they believe to be true in terms of how they're helping their customers, does it align with ours? And if we feel like there's a fit in terms of the values and the culture, then we sort of double down. And again, this is really, it's really driven from our CEO. And then we as a team work together to help realize the vision.
Yeah. Well, so just as a point of reference, you know, what are some of the values that you are looking for in other organizations? Because, just as a for instance, you know, when I think of the Royals and when I think of Community America, I think about, you know, integrity, like that, for whatever reason, like that's one of the values that like pops into my head. But like, yeah. what alignments are you looking for from a cultural standpoint?
Yeah, I think at that strategic level, I think it is, it's not a zero sum game. It's about 1 + 1 = 5. So the mentality of someone who can say, I'm going to change my position to win for the broader organization. So I think it's more of a mindset. And I think that translates to when, you know, a smaller business is trying to interact with us or any client. I think it's about being straightforward, being plain spoken, being forthright, having ethics, having values, respecting one another, caring about each other. It's really, it's almost like this Midwestern sensibility. But to be clear, just so there's no confusion, we have a fierce sense of winning and winning for our members. So it is we are very competitive when it comes to win for our members, because our members are our shareholders. So don't just like we sit around and say, you know, let's have lunch together. It really comes down to this value system, as well as kind of a fierce drive to compete and win, but a sense of a partner mentality. And you know what I mean? Sure. Like a partner where if we come in together, the ultimate end is going to be bigger than the sum of the parts. And that is really a mindset that is infused in our entire culture.
That makes me so happy. And I'm like, yeah, that's an example of yet another value that is in alignment. You know, the Chiefs and the Royals, they win for their fans. Community America wins for their members. And,
yes, right.
You know, imagine at the end of the year, like getting that annual report and seeing, hey, Community America was successful, but yeah. Not just that, they were successful for me in addition to because of me. Like it's just so cool. So we're talking about partners here, and I do just really quickly want to remind you, Startup Hustle has an amazing partner in Helium 10. Today's episode is sponsored by our friends over at Helium 10. They have over 30 tools to help you research, start, and manage your business on Amazon, which I think is super cool. I've looked into it in the past, managing your business on Amazon. It's no joke. It's a difficult thing.
So I wish I had it when we were marketing our consumer products. Our
startup. Right? Like, I mean, just
really smart.
An organization that is there when you need them to help you figure out what you don't, you never know what you don't know, right? Mm-hmm. So they've got all of these tools that can help you research and help you manage your business. So get all the tools you need to run and grow your business by signing up at helium10.com. Startup Hustlers get 50% off by using the code HUSTLE. And we are very, very grateful for that. So the question that I want to ask you, And I feel like this might be a little bit of an obvious one, but I'm going to ask it anyway, because I feel like it. But what is the value of landing a big client? Money, of course, but what are some of the things that landing a big client can help you with, but, you know, perceived and real benefits?
Yeah. I mean, I think especially your first big client, that anchor client, it gives you credibility. It gives you the ability to, it's just a brand cue. It gives you, I mean, it obviously gives you money, but it's a brand cue and a signal for other brands that you're actually credible.
Yeah.
And it's important. And the first one is always the hardest. Like, you know, we were talking earlier, Lauren, that I've been on both sides. I have been in a company where I worked at Sprint, where I had a $600 million budget and I ran media and advertising. I like to say I've never been prettier. I've never had, people have never laughed louder than in my jokes when I was there because I had so many people selling to me.
Sure.
But then I've been on the other side where I've had to just sell to big, large organizations. It's really, really, really hard. That first one is the most, this is by far and away the most difficult. And then hopefully it gets easier from there.
Yeah. I don't know if you remember this, but a while back we were working on some funding opportunities for an organization. And you, like when we were kind of strategizing and talking about how we were going to approach these meetings and approach these proposals, you had it on lock, like your whole attitude, like you were very clear. You were like, find the value for them. And then find a way to sell to the value for them. And it, like, I just remember having this series of conversations with you where I was just blown away. I was like, she really, really gets it. And not only that, she knows how to communicate it in a way that is accessible and actionable. And so thank you for that, because you definitely gave me a bit of an education when it comes to, you know, really selling, you know, selling your brand, selling yourself to another organization, to a potential client, to a potential funder. So what are some of your best practices for acquiring big clients? You've got, I feel like you have so much wisdom in there.
Well, I'll give you some thoughts and some macro tips, but then I'll give you some really like ticky tacky tips, because I think sometimes it's the mechanics that make all the difference.
Absolutely.
First of all, it's hard. Okay, so it's just, you know, you're a startup and you need clients and revenue, and you have to start by knowing, and it's obvious, but it bears repeating, large customers take a long time. And being patient and setting, if I can say one thing, set expectations for the CEO or your funder. You know, they're going to put pressure on you to fill the pipeline and to get sales faster. You know, try to be as intellectually honest as you can. I know it's a challenge, but I think coming in the door, let me just walk through. So getting into the door, like how do you get into the door? There's three ways that typically happen. One is through marketing. So hopefully you've got really good lead gen. If you don't, I strongly recommend you get someone who knows how to do content marketing and lead gen. When I was at Ad Knowledge, or now it's Ad Parlor, we used HubSpot, and it can shorten your cycle. It's about 6 months. But your marketing department should be able, or your marketing guy, or maybe it's your wife or your brother.
Maybe it's you.
Maybe it's you on the other side. But they can shorten the cycle so that when you actually get a deal or get a lead, it's a warm lead. So I think that's, if you are, you know, when you have more than one guy, if you have like three or five, that's the first thing I would do with your marketing group. But I also think most of the leads are going to come from friends and family. And most of the meetings that come on my desk are people that are connections. So a brother, an employee, a network, an alumni, a boss, a boss's boss, a board member. 99% of the meetings I take are because someone is asking me to. Sure. And I think it's really important to know that, because I'm not asking for the meeting. I'm doing it as a favor to someone, and you're barring that kind of brand credibility of that person. And the only reason I say that's super important, Lauren, is because I'm probably not the decision maker. I'm a guide, and I'm probably not in the market for your product. And so how you work with, and 99% of the conversations you're having with a complex customer are going to be like me. I'm not the decision maker. I don't have the budget. And I probably, so how do you work me in a way that actually can produce outcomes? Does that make sense? So
I don't know if I like the phrase work you, like if you can,
you know, like, you know, like, yeah,
leverage the, what are the other buzzwords? Leverage the relationship.
Win me over, make it real, whatever.
But I see your point.
Yeah. So I just wanted to give a couple of comments, because I think this is like where most people, the two areas that I think people I see could improve is email. I just want to just park on email for a second.
Yeah.
So email is like your enemy and your friend at the same time. So I don't know how you do email, but this is how I was taught, and I've worked on this a lot. So this would be my wisdom I would impart for you to either write it down or round file it. But Step one,
taking notes like crazy.
Step one is like an introduction where you're like, and you obviously say, Joe recommended I call you. Obviously, you're going to connect however we met, which I think is really, really smart. So that's the first thing. You will probably not get a response right away, only because unless it's my boss or my CEO or, you know, my mother or something like that.
Right.
Because we get on average 100 emails a day.
Sure.
And so if you're new, if you're brand new, if you're that Generation Z, you're going to think, I don't want to bother here. But if you've been around a while, you know, it's just because we're busy. So the second email, which is a week later, is subject bumping up this to your inbox or gentle reminder. You're just gently putting it back into the box. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And you probably are not going to get a response. Unlikely, unless again, it's my mother who recommended me. And then the third would be, you know, something like, and I've seen this done. I'll see if I can pull it up. You know, you're really busy. Tell me, you know, one, you have too much time and you're not interested. Number two, you're just busy and haven't got to it. Or three, you know, you don't have any, you know, you're not, you've moved on. Just let me, or you want to talk or whatever. Let me know what number it is and I'll let you know. Like just something very, very simple like that is a very effective tactic. And I'll see if I can pull it up. But I saw someone do that. And I like that.
And then I want to just note that, like, I think that one of the most valuable tools that you could have to support this process that you're talking about is like, is a sturdy CRM, you know, to help you manage, like say that you have 20 prospective clients on a list. Okay. I need a system that is going to help me kind of track and trigger when to follow up, when to. So highly recommend, like I'm a CRM geek.
I'm a CRM geek. Yeah.
Because managing this stuff like all on your lonesome is just gonna drive you crazy.
And there are some really cheap ones. I mean, you can build Airtable is one that you have.
I use Airtable a lot.
I'm obsessed with Airtable. I think my my developer wants to marry Airtable. But I've used Infusionsoft. They're really inexpensive. I've used HubSpot. If you get
Zoho has like a free option, I think up to like a certain number of contacts or something. Like, I mean, just do a Google search. You can find any number of tools, but just find a system that will help you track and manage all of these different relationships that you're trying to build.
Totally. And then the last one I'll say, this is the ultimate secret weapon. For if you don't get anyone to respond to you, this is it. This is like the one that will give you an 85% response rate. Yeah. And that is the subject line you write. This is after 4 or 5 weeks of trying. You write, did I do something wrong?
And this is where you're going to go in for the guilt trip.
You know, into the Catholic guilt, Asian guilt that we all feel.
Jewish girl,
like a total jerk for not responding, and you will respond. So, and again, everyone has their own system, but that's probably one of the biggest questions I get. So that's what I would use anyway.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. So anyway, so that's
that
like
is, that is too funny. All right. So you send this email, and somebody responds back to you, and they're like, "No, you didn't do anything wrong. Let's set up a time to chat."
Yeah, they will feel bad about themselves, which is what you want because you want the meeting because you've got to get a deal. You got to get the deal done. But, and then I guess the only other thing I would say is once you do get the meeting, this is tough because you don't know, you're trying to make a connection, you're trying to make a sale. And the only thing, just a couple things I just want to mention there is I've seen it where there's no agenda. And remember that. We talked about Generation Z and, you know, they have the attention span of a goldfish. It's 8 seconds.
Sure.
Executives are exactly the same level, maybe 10 seconds. And so that first minute or two really counts. And so I've seen meetings where there's no agenda and we just want to sit and talk. And I want to just take a dull butter knife to my wrist because I'm so busy and I have no, I mean, what's the purpose?
Yeah.
When you have a stream where you're like, flying through 100 slides, you know, the middle is really the key is like, you've done your work, you're prepared. you know a little bit about the company. Especially if it's someone who's not the decision maker, resist the urge to try to make a sale. The goal is to create a relationship, because I will tell you that I have, and they don't even know this, I have recommended products and services to my other friends and colleagues, even though I won't use them, but I liked what they did. But it's not about trying to get the sale right away. It's about building a relationship. And I know you've heard the expression, if you ask for money, you'll get advice. Yeah. If you ask for advice, you're more likely to get money. Yeah. I think the same is true here. I think especially if you don't know the person and you don't know if there's a fit, basically just sharing the information and saying, what do you think? You're probably going to get a better set of outcomes than trying to sell me something.
Yeah.
But you can play around with it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it makes total sense. And I love that, because I think that in today's global economy, you know, there are so many competitors out there, and you certainly have the shoppers who are looking for like the lowest cost, or they're looking for the quickest turnaround, or what have you. But I think that a lot of consumers, and I would go so far as to say most want to have a relationship of some kind, and they want to know that, you know, you understand my pain points and you're working to address them. And in order for us to have a productive, mutually beneficial relationship, like, you get the sale, but then I get to use the product, or I get to use the service, or I get the stuff. And so there's this, like, it's a symbiotic relationship that you're kind of building, starting with guilt, but, you know, over the course of time, you know, having command of your data, you know, understanding your customer, answering questions, you know, like establishing yourself as an expert. Like, there are any number of things that you can do that have nothing to do with making a sale, that have everything to do with making a sale.
I agree. You said that so well. And I would go into that first meeting, is your goal is to just be prepared and learn and build a relationship. Because what I would say about most industries, even though we're global, most industries are like high school. So like credit unions, you don't think about it initially, but I probably know a third of the credit union executives now. Or if you're an ad tech, like, you get to know. And what's so interesting is I think so many people, they'll try to sell to, let's say it sold to me and a couple of other folks within, and then they stop. And I know you've got to be really efficient with your time, which is obviously why you do need a CRM. But, you know, when we were selling a startup, it's called Mighty Good. We had a little product called Mighty Handle. Ben Rando, who's the founder of the company, and I finally went to Walmart and the buyer, and we had a meeting, and the buyer said, oh yeah. And we ended up making the sale. The buyer had been pitched that our product by two brokers in advance, and the brokers never told us.
My only thing is that
had we known that, we wouldn't have even tried. Right. And so you just want to be annoying. But what happens is, I guess my point is that organizations shift, they change, the needs change. And so be very strategic about the people that you want to be your people can be your advocates, even though they're not your customers. And so Destiny Wealth, like, I love those guys. We are going a different path, but I would advocate for them. You know, Donald Hawkins, I mean, he's done I think he is wonderful. It's not right now. We're not right for it now, but I would advocate for him and his work. And so I think knowing that can be sometimes as valuable. Obviously you make a sale, but I think those are those contextual things that it just takes time and effort, but in the long run can be very helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. That was like a mic drop moment right there for Anita Newton. So I have left us, I've actually left us a little bit of additional time for this last question that I'm going to ask you. And it's the human question, but I'm going to ask yours a little differently than I do most. Yours has a little bit more meat on its bones. It's not quite so fluffy. And I apologize for that in advance. But I wonder, one of the things that you mentioned, you know, you have two kids and clearly you have a very innovative mind. I know that your husband has a very innovative mind. Like you're kind of an innovation family. And so I want to ask you this because I'm very interested. What do you do around the Newton family table to encourage, maybe not like entrepreneurship, but entrepreneurial thinking, innovation? What do you do to model that for your kids? Yeah. Or to encourage that in your kids?
That is, I love that question so much. I can tell you, because I think it is the most important thing a parent can do for their children.
For sure.
The three things, I mean, first, I was really lucky in that I've always had startups since my kids were growing up. So they grew up putting, you know, products in press release bags and being on photo shoots and like all of the, so they've kind of grown up around it. But I think, you know, the conversations at dinner, we do have a lot of conversations and it's about anything. I think it's more about letting people asking questions, even though they may seem more older, like we talked a lot about politics and all the things that were going on this summer with Black Lives Matter and whatever the answer is, encouraging it even, and just having spirited debates. So just treating we've always treated our, you know, teenagers as adults. So I think that's the second thing. And I think the third, the most important thing, if I can say anything, is have your student or, you know, niece, nephew, son, daughter, have them participate in the gig economy. If I can say one thing, so whatever they love, if they are, if they love guitar, have them do a YouTube channel. If they make slime, have them set up Etsy. If they love to write, have them do a blog, because the act of tinkering, you know, my son, he loved shoes. So he flipped shoes and he like figured it out. And my daughter likes to write. So she created, and just the act of tinkering and figuring out the economy and the gig economy and how things work, that is how you learn to figure stuff out and get away from that. Let me recite the War of 1812 to what you were talking about, which is how to problem solve and think differently and be innovative. And they figure it out themselves. That is the most important. I'll say one last thing for those of parents who are like really in it to win it.
Yeah.
This will be when they apply for internships, the employer is not going to ask them, so tell me about your biology AP exam. They're going to say, whoa, what, like, tell me about this YouTube channel. And your student is going to light up the room because they're so passionate.
Right. And
they learn communications, problem solving, all of those things. So I think that is the number one thing I would ask anyone to do. I think it sets you up for success like nothing else.
Yeah.
I was like, really, I kind of got on a roll there.
I love that so much. And I knew that you were going to have a lot to say about it. Well, because I know how, like, you're a great mom, like from everything that I've seen, you're a great mom, but I know that you have an innovative mind and I've seen you work personally with students on kind of that entrepreneurial thought process. And I was like, you know, I could ask a dumb question, like, I mean, all right, you know, if you could travel anywhere, where would you travel to? Like, I could ask you that and feel free to answer if you like, but I was like, you know, I have this oh yeah.
Maybe two different trips.
Awesome. Fair enough. But no, I wanted to get your thoughts on it because I think I've seen you in action enough, you know, working around kids where I'm like, I bet she'd have some really good insights. And I was right. So, you know, Anita, I cannot thank you enough for taking the time to talk with us today. We talked about a bunch of different topics, but this was lovely. And I always love talking to you.
I am such a fan of you and the work that you're doing. And I think this is so helpful. And I'm so honored to have come on your show. And thank you for having me. And if anyone has any questions, I'll put, you can reach out to me on LinkedIn. It's Anita Newton. I think I'm the only one. Happy to answer questions, but thank you again for having me. It was a lot of fun.
And definitely do. I mean, when you're talking about powerhouse, brilliant minds, you know, Anita Newton is like definitely at the tops of my list. Another one that is at the tops of my list is Helium 10. Once again, today's episode of Startup Hustle was sponsored by Helium 10. Helium 10 is cutting edge software that helps you grow your business on Amazon, which more of us would love to do. So start your own journey by visiting helium10.com to scale your business on Amazon today. Remember to use Hustle, the code Hustle, for half off. Thank you so much, listeners. This is Lauren Conaway signing off, and we will catch you on the flip side.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.